Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the Michael Yo episode. My favorite part of his interview was when he talked about going on Joe Rogan's podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience, and I really enjoyed that story. So thanks for tuning in. Peace.
What's up, man?
What's up, dude? How are you?
Doing good. You got the mic already, huh?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm making it official for you. I'm making it official, bro.
Thank you so much, Michael, for doing this. It's been a long time coming. I know we were talking on Instagram, but I needed to lock you in, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it, homie.
Yeah. So where are you living right now?
I'm in Las Vegas, bro.
You're in Vegas?
Yeah. We moved to Vegas about 3-4 months ago. After that whole COVID thing I went through, I was just like, LA's too fucking crowded.
I want to get to that because that was all over social media and everything.
Yeah, man. So yeah. We just got out of there and we've been staying in Vegas. Her parents, like, I got a place like a couple houses down from her parents and we got another kid. So it's kind of like,
it's perfect. It's really,
let me tell you, man. It's so easy living out here compared to LA. Yeah, I mean, you live there, you know, you always feel like you're in it.
Right.
You're never out of it. And
yeah, that's how I feel. I feel the energy. I live right in the middle of Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, by the Kodak Theater.
Oh, so you're right in the middle.
I'm right there. And I feel messed up half the time.
Yeah, it's a thing where you just never get away. And now when I can come to Vegas and just chill and then, you know, go back. Because here's the thing. Everything's online. It's going to be online to the middle of next year, end of next year. All my auditions, all my castings, everything. You just send in a video. So you can
live
anywhere.
Do it at home. You could just tape it yourself.
Oh, yeah. Like I'm up for a couple of TV shows. You know, I know Bobby does a lot of acting, but everything is like you self-tape it and you turn it in. So you don't even need to live there. Look, Joe Rogan left. Theo Vonnegut's a place in Nashville.
I just saw Brian Redband just
Austin,
bought
Texas,
a house
bro.
In Austin.
Dude, I'm telling you, next, we need you out here, Steven. We need you.
Oh, man,
in
I would
Vegas.
Love to go to Texas or Vegas. Yeah, I heard Vegas is cool. I mean, Vegas is closer to my mom. My mom's in Arizona.
Yeah, you know why I picked Vegas is because when it does fully open up, you know, I love stand-up, so I'll be able to go to strip, just hit a bunch of clubs and not have to.
Oh, yeah, Vegas.
Yeah, fight for stage time. You just go up, have fun. Pauly Shore just moved out here. Brent Urst just moved out here.
Pauly Shore moved out there?
Yeah, he lives out here too.
I thought he lived in Silver Lake or Echo Park.
No, he moved, bro. He moved the same time I moved about 4 or 5 months ago. He lives in old Vegas and I live in I'm living here, but we're building a house. So it'll be done in like 6 months.
Oh, you guys are building it
from scratch.
The ground up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so dope, man.
Yeah. And then I have, I can't announce it, but cause they're not announced yet, but I'm shooting like 3 shows next year. They got pushed to next year.
Congratulations. So
No, cause they haven't announced them.
Non-disclosure yet.
But what I'm excited about, I'm going to be in LA a lot. So literally it's the best of both worlds.
What is Vegas? Does Vegas kind of do they offer all the things that LA has?
And more, man, to me, like, I don't know. It's
like you got your Whole Foods out there. You got all your shops.
Oh, Whole Foods. We got the Trader Joe's.
Oh, you got Trader Joe's out there.
Oh, they got everything, man. It's, dude, I'm telling you, love it. The weather is perfect right now. In the summer, it gets hot, but hopefully I'll be in LA then. But it's a thing where it's more than that. It's just the simplicity of it. Never traffic. Haven't hit traffic once.
It's quiet. It's just
quiet. And right now we live in a place called Lake Las Vegas. Literally, it's like a resort. Like you drive in.
Oh, wow. It's that nice.
Yeah. And it's not like it's expensive. It's just, it's about 40 minutes away from like the strip.
Yeah.
So I'm like out here. You know what I mean? And I love it. It's just so different.
It's mellow. How's the weather?
Oh, right now it's 70, 75. Yeah, now the summer.
I had a bandmate of mine, Heather Leather. She was the bassist of my band, mm-hmm. and she just bought a house out there as well.
Dude, no taxes, bro.
No taxes. It's like Texas.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Texas. It's like Florida. That's why you need to bring your ass out here and set up shop, bro.
You could get something nice for like $300.
Dude, I'm telling you, and check this out. The flights wherever you got to travel, if you do traveling, it's so much cheaper out of Vegas. You know, I'm so happy I don't have to fucking go to LAX ever again.
Oh, that place is a nightmare.
Dude, it sucks, bro. It sucks. Yeah. You know, I don't want to, like, I love LA, but just too many people. And then I think, you know, after this whole Corona thing, everybody's realizing you don't have to live where you live a lot of times. You just do it because.
You're right. Because it's like everything, like I'm doing this, you're there. We're Zooming and we're doing a podcast right now. And half the, you know Tom Green, right?
Of course.
You know what he's doing, right?
I saw him a couple months ago. He was trying to do his whole podcast thing by himself.
He's traveling in a van with his dog, traveling across the U.S.
That's dope.
Doing content, man.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do that. I got two kids. My wife would be pissed if I just jumped in a van and bounced.
Like, he got a drone camera and shit. Yeah, it's crazy.
Now, I mean, if you're single, you can do that. You know, I don't know if you're single or married or got a girlfriend or not, but when you're like, my boat is, I got two kids, 3 and 1 year old, and my wife. I can't just jump in a van and peace out.
You know what you can do, Michael, is you can travel like Tom, but just do vlogs of like different Airbnbs.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. You know what's so interesting about social media right now? I was looking at some friends and like some of them got millions of followers. Some of them have 200 followers, but it's really, I'm finding out, I haven't really found my voice on social media yet, but I'm seeing that the more niche you are, the better your crowd. Cause if you just stay at Airbnbs, then everybody that stays in Airbnbs will watch you. You know, it's kind of like I was talking to my wife. It's almost like I put a lot of family photos, but now it's like I got to just put up comedy and that's it. Take all the family shit out and just, you know, I don't know. It's just I haven't found my lane on social media yet.
Well, what about incorporating your kids in your content, like doing a kids channel on YouTube? I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with stuff right on the fly.
Let me tell you, my son watches Ryan. And this fucking Ryan kid and his parents, they make $23 million a year on YouTube. And all they do is literally follow their kid around with an iPhone. And you need to watch this, how low budget it is.
Yeah. But
these things have like 150 million views.
There's a market for everything. Like those kids shows on YouTube, like the sing-alongs.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's money in the bank.
Dude, it was unbelievable. Like this kid, my son watches this kid named Ryan 24/7.
Ryan, man.
He's a Filipino kid.
And he's killing it. He just does kid videos.
Dude, they follow him like when before COVID, they would follow him to theme parks and it wasn't even cut. It was literally into the video. They would start the next video. It was it's so ghetto.
Killing it. I bet he's got like millions of subscribers.
I don't know how many. It's probably like 10 million subscribers.
Come on, dude. That's crazy. Yeah.
But his videos, like I said, get 20 to like 50 to 100 million views. And last year, he was the most paid kid. He made $23 million. The kid made $23
million. On YouTube?
On YouTube, bro. On YouTube. Yes. Yes. So I was like, I was like, we need to follow our kid around with a camera.
Not only that, you know what else kills it? If you have like a dog.
Yeah. See, I don't have many animals right now.
Like I got one, but Kirby's with my girl right now in Walnut. Okay. But I've actually thought about maybe creating a channel for just him.
Well, I'm telling you, what I'm learning is anything that is just one audience, you know, very small niche audience. Like, cause you can't say like Instagram, let's just talk about Instagram. You can't say there's a talent to have a lot of followers because there's some people that just show abs or show a butt.
Their butt.
Yeah. And they got
bubble butts.
Yeah. Or they got 10 million. That's not talent. You know, you just bought that. Yeah. So but with comics, I feel like I haven't found because I have that, I have my special ablation, but I haven't found, I haven't cut it up into a lot of clips. So it's like, do I just do clips? Do I like how Jim Gaffigan kind of does the whole family thing?
Ablation on Amazon Prime, that's your special, right?
Yeah, that's the special. Yeah.
Are you allowed, are you legally allowed to cut like parts and put it on your social media?
I don't know, but I'm going to do it anyway because I need to get it out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a thing.
How do people check that out? Like if people watch this, how they just go to Amazon Prime?
I would just, you know what? Just go to MichaelYo.com. It's right there. Free link. You can just watch it for free. MichaelYo.com. But yeah, it's a thing of just trying to get out there. And I'm trying to figure out this whole social media world. Like on YouTube is different from Facebook to Facebook to Instagram. Like I don't really mess with Twitter anymore. Like,
right. You know what's crazy? I just interviewed this girl, Gina Darling. She's a streamer.
Okay.
And you know, people pay to watch her sleep, dog.
Oh, see.
To watch her go to bed.
But here's the thing. People will pay for anything. You know, there's some creepy people out there, man. Like, I knew a girl.
Can't do that. Ain't nobody watching me sleep, man.
No, nobody's watching dudes do that. No.
Or else I'd have an OnlyFans. I'd be killing it on OnlyFans.
I know, right? You'd be taking naps all day.
Yeah. Dudes can't do only. I mean, you could be the prettiest guy in the world. You only, good luck doing OnlyFans.
Nobody wants to watch dudes sleep. But let me tell you, I knew this girl, and she's an anchor. Her name is Christine Leahy.
Oh, and shout out to her.
Yeah, shout out to her. But she was on my podcast, and she was telling me dudes will try to send her money for just pictures of her toes. So
Wait. Say that one more time. I don't think I heard that right.
Dudes will send her money just for pictures. Like, we're talking like thousands of dollars just to take like photos of her feet and send them. She says she's never done it. I believe her. But yeah, but it's weird, man.
Pay me money to look at these.
Let me see those jacked up feet. You got messed up toes?
Hobbit. Yeah. Hobbit foot.
Yeah. Nobody's paying for that shit.
Nope.
Not at all.
Yeah, we're living in a crazy time, man. It's crazy. It's like, have you seen that movie Truman Show?
Yeah. Yes.
Where everyone is in their own Truman Show, man.
It is, man. How are you dealing with the pandemic?
I'm doing this. I'm working on music. I'm writing every night. I'm making, you know, I'm trying to stay creative and productive. I'm trying to, at least with content creators, we could still do shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I feel in a place where sometimes it's like, it gets depressing that you can't do what you love to do. Like, I love traveling. Yeah. I love doing stand up, and that's taken away from me, and it's kind of like hurting. I would imagine it's like you playing music like in front of people.
Yeah. Or not only that, it's just going to Starbucks. I miss going to Starbucks, man. Just the simple things.
Yeah. It's tough right now, man. Yeah. And I, you know, it's a thing where I, after I beat COVID, I went out on a couple of tour dates, and, you know, I tell people to mask up and things, but I felt like a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, we got to earn a living too. This is what we do, you know? So
The homie Eric Griffin, you know what he started doing, right?
What did he start doing?
Just gaming, playing Warzone, just video games.
Yeah. Is that going well for him?
Yeah, dude, he's doing good.
Yeah, man, it's those people that there's a huge audience for that, man. I was a gamer till the games got too many damn buttons. I can't mess with it.
So you had the first Nintendo?
Yeah, I had ColecoVision. I had Nintendo.
Oh, you're bringing it back to ColecoVision?
Atari 2600.
Oh,
back
in dude, you're going back to the 80s.
Yeah, man, I had all of them, and then I was even down with the first like Madden, but then and you know, no offense to shooter games or anything, but when they got super violent and when I was scared to walk in another room and it's a game.
Oh, like, like the Resident Evils and all that.
And the controller would shake.
Yeah,
and I was like, nah, I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah, those games were like horror movies.
Dude, it was so real and scary. I couldn't play them anymore. I was just like, nah, I'm done with this.
So let's take it back to, because you have all this cool shit going on, but where did you get your start in comedy? Like, where did you grow up and how'd you get interested in comedy?
So I got my start in comedy when I started the Chelsea Handler show, the Chelsea Lately
Chelsea
show.
Chelsea Lately.
So I wasn't a comic on it. I was like a reporter because I worked for E! And I interviewed celebrities.
Well,
so,
how'd you get that gig?
Dude, it was a random ass story. There was the president of the company, Ted Harbor, was there in casting. It was a lady, Annie, Tiffany, and Maureen. I did a radio show in Miami, and the radio show was big in Miami. I did Afternoon Drive, and the president supposedly heard me on the radio, called casting to talk to me, and literally I got hired on TV with no TV experience.
Damn.
Because they were like, we just like your personality, and we need that. You know, that's so cool. That's how it started. And then, you know, I just treat everybody nice and how I want to be treated. And then that's how I met the Kardashians. They put me on their show.
Are they like cool, man? Like in real life?
I love them. Love it.
Really?
Dude,
I know they get a bad rap because the media and everything.
Well, here's the thing. There's so many reality shows, right? But very few reality shows go on past 10 years and make the family not just millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. So
those shows have done that?
I mean, they sell products, bro. Like they're selling out everywhere. Like the Kylie lip kits and the whole family. Everything's selling out. Like it's great. So when people go, oh, they don't have talent. Look, you're in the business. You know how hard it is.
Talent too, you know?
Well, and you know how hard it is for people to get people to buy stuff from you.
It's hard, dude.
They're doing billion-dollar businesses over there. So you can say all you want.
She could just sell like her own foot fungus and people will buy it.
Well, look at Jessica Simpson. Everybody made fun of her. She's a billion, like a straight up billionaire from her hair. She made fake hair or hair extensions and she's a billionaire from it.
She's a billionaire?
Yeah, she's an entrepreneur. She's huge, bro, from that. So make fun of them all you want, but they making some cash.
Yeah. So you got your break with Chelsea. When did you start doing, do you start with the open mic circuit?
No, I had a big radio show in Miami at the time, right?
Yeah.
So I was on Chelsea. I did their show from LA, my Miami show from LA, but I would do Chelsea like every 2 or 3 weeks. And one day I said, I'm gonna try stand up on the show. And Chelsea and all the comedians, like, oh, there's no way you can do that. I go, well, I'm here with y'all and it doesn't look that hard, right?
Yeah.
So, and they kind of teased me about it. So 2 weeks later, I went to the Miami Improv. I was on the radio, had a big radio. So I invited everybody out that listened to my show. My first show sold out. I did 15 minutes my first time ever.
And what?
Yeah, but because here's the thing. I didn't know you weren't supposed to.
No, and you start at 3 minutes, don't you?
Well, yeah, but when people don't know, and this is the thing, this is a piece of inspiration I want to give people. When you don't know the rules, then nothing can hold you back.
Right.
I didn't know you were only supposed to do that. So I went up there and just messed around for 15 minutes. And the owner of the club was like, that's not your first time. Joel Bakroff, he owns Stand Up Live and a bunch of improvs. And he goes, all right, we're going to see how good you really are. Tomorrow night, you're going to open up for the Wayans brothers.
Wait, so which one, Damon?
Damon and Marlon. No, Sean. I think it was Sean and Marlon.
Sean.
So the second night they send me to West Palm and I know them, thank God, but I didn't even know what a light was, bro.
Like, right.
So I get to West Palm and they go, look for the light. You're going to do 3 to 5. Look for the light. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I stayed up there for like almost 17 minutes.
Damn.
Open it. And they teased me about it, but I didn't know what a light was, man. And I just had a fun, but they gave me so much confidence, Marlon and Sean. They were like, yo, you can do this. This is you. So
cool. I'm a big fan of Damon.
Dude, so nice. The whole Wayans family is.
That dude's a legend. Damon's the man.
Dude, in Living Color? I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. I worked at the Tempe Improv as a food runner.
Did you really?
Yeah, I got fired.
How? guys that started me at
between shows, you have to bring food to these tables.
Yeah, that's your job. Yeah,
that's my job. You know, and so one of the tables is out in the front. Something messed up with their super nachos.
Oh no!
So you messed up the super nachos. I confronted the waitress. I told her like near the kitchen. I go, hey, can you make sure you put the right order in next time? And she like looked at me like, oh, is that right? And, And then I didn't know, man, she was boning the manager.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
that it, you know what night that was? That was I think Sean Waynes was performing too, because I was like jocking him hard because of his color, you know. I was sweating him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so after my shift was over, I think his name was Neil, said, "Clear out your locker, you're fired."
Now, when was this? Was this the old 90s. Tempe?
This was in the 90s.
Oh, this is the old Tempe Improv.
Yeah, this was in the 90s because I went to Arizona State and it was Tempe Improv was near campus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They reopened that Tempe Improv and the people that started me in comedy now bought it and they own Stand Up Live. And that. But let me tell you, so you must, ASU, so you just partied.
Literally, it's all a blur. I think I spent, like, I'm not lying to you, like 7 or 8 years on campus. Maybe even 9. Yeah.
That school, every time I go down.
I was drugged out.
Really?
Yeah, I was just skateboarding around campus looking for weed.
Like you do in college, like you're supposed to do in college.
Yeah. And so going back to yours, so you're from Florida. Right?
No, I'm from Houston, but I lived in Florida for 12 years. Yeah.
What was that like?
Loved it. Cause I got there when I was young, bro. I got my job in Miami. It was 2000, 20 years ago. You remember that show on E called Wild on E?
Yeah.
Brooke Burke was hosting it. Bro, she would go to all these party cities and literally they called me and offered me the job in Miami while I was watching Wild on E in Miami.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going. And it was just a culture shock, man. I moved from Austin, Texas, where drinks were $1.50. I go up to the bar the first time, order 3 drinks, and he's like, $55. I'm like, what? Yeah, those were the prices 20 years ago for 3 drinks. Yeah, it's insane, bro.
$55?
Yeah.
For a Corona, like 3 Coronas?
No, it was like mixed drinks, they weren't.
But still, that's much money.
But you, I was thinking it'd be like $10.
Yeah.
A dude straight from Austin, Texas to Miami. It was a culture shock, man.
Yeah.
Like the first club I went into stayed open to 6 a.m. and it didn't get crowded. I got there at normal time, like you would in Texas.
Yeah.
Got there around 11, nobody there. And they go, no, they'll come around 1.
I'm guessing, is Florida like New York as far as the nightlife is concerned?
Well, yeah, club wise, if you want to talk club. Oh yeah, South Beach. I lived in South Beach, man.
Is it like that movie Scarface? I've never been there. I've just seen movies. Is it like Scarface?
I'm sure there's a lot of drugs there, but no, it's more like Bad Boys when they shot in Miami.
Martin Lawrence, Bad Boys. Yeah,
it's just like that, like parties. It was insane, bro. It was
insane. So is there like a strip like Vegas where all the bars are?
Yeah, it's called South Beach.
Okay, so that's where all like on MTV, that's where they'd film their spring breaks and stuff?
It was down there. And I was a lot younger, so I was in my party days. So I would stay, like I met everybody. I was on the radio out there.
Yeah.
It was like when I said every celebrity would come into town and I just knew everybody back then. You know, it was great. It was a lot of fun.
This was in the 2000s?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy.
So and
I'm a huge college football fan, so I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, and they were winning national championships at that time. It was just everything. It's like when you move into a town and they embrace you, you embrace them, and it's just beautiful. That's what it was in the 2000s for me in Miami.
Yeah. And then so let's keep going on your progression. So you did those things, and you passed. And then you just started was there like a circuit out there where you could just go on stage?
Oh, no, I didn't start comedy till I moved to LA. I've only been doing comedy. This is my 10th year.
Oh, that's not a lot.
No. But
I thought you were like veteran, like 20 years plus.
Oh, no. I just started 10 years ago. But I get so much love from comedians and all the clubs put me up. And I've grown so fast because I think I've done so much stage time.
Yeah.
You know, but I got to say, you know, like even like Bobby Lee, Theo Von, like Theo
Von.
Yeah,
how'd you meet my brother, man?
Dude, just in the clubs. Seriously, just
was
in the clubs.
Is he cool to you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's cool. He lies to me a lot, but he's cool. That fucker lies a lot.
It's in his eyes, huh?
Oh, it's his eye. He's like, hey, I'm gonna put you on my podcast. You need to be on. Every time. Every time. He's like, hey, 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 yo, you're gonna be on my podcast. We gotta do this. Why? You know, every time, even like every time he'll even, I said, so when are we gonna do the podcast? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen.
You haven't been on Tiger Belly?
Oh no. I think he only wants for some reason.
Yo, like you're on Joe Rogan though, man. You like
three times.
You hop, because that's the top.
Yeah, Joe Rogan three times, Tiger Belly zero.
Yeah.
And I tell Bobby, like,
you heard it first at the Stevie Weeby show. You were right. I put you on first.
That's right, Stevie Weeby. And when I blow the fuck up, I'm gonna say, nah, Bobby, just Stevie. Stevie Weeby.
So if you have a casting where you're looking for a small Asian guy, you look right past him and right now, to me.
That's right. Now you're Korean, right?
Yeah, you are too, right?
I'm half. And yeah. I think Bobby Lee has a problem with me being taller than him. And that's why he won't put me, another Korean that's taller than him.
Oh, because, yeah, he's got an inferiority complex.
Yeah, and he's always telling me I'm way better looking than him. You know, so I think that's, he doesn't want me in the same room knowing that I'm half Korean. Because now he has no excuse. I'm Korean too.
Yeah, you know have you been to Korea, man?
No, my mom lied to me. She told me she was going to take me to the Olympics back in the day in
84. Oh, in 88.
Was it 88 or 84?
Yeah, it was 88, I think. Korea, Seoul?
Seoul.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's from, she lied to me. And yeah. I never went. And then, you know, it just never happened. Like, she's from Daegu.
Oh, okay, that's what's up. Did you grow up her speaking Korean to you?
No. You know what's messed up, man, is... I'm born in Houston. So yeah.
Is there Koreans out in Houston?
Oh yeah. Mad Koreans in Houston.
What?
Yeah, they're Koreatown. I think they're the second biggest besides LA, Koreatown.
Oh, so shout out to Houston.
Yeah, H-Town, baby. Damn. But back in the day, it wasn't like that. Back in the day where I grew up, like you got to remember, this is the time where I lived in pretty much an all white neighborhood. And the thing I saw a lot is when you were, you know, Chinese or Korean or whatever, Asian.
They would do this thing.
Yeah.
So my mom saw that. My mom, people spoke to her.
We all went through that. We all did.
And my mom, you know, she was, just think about this. I believe biracial couples were legalized in 1960. And they got married in
19- you have that on your Instagram.
Yeah, my parents got married 6 years after. Just think about that.
That's
just
crazy. 6 years.
It's crazy. So people looked at my dad. People made fun of her.
I can't even imagine the discrimination, but they must have gone through it.
Yeah, and worse than that is on my dad's side, like my dad's father was racist against my mom.
What? You know?
So listen to this story. And I'm finding out all this now from my parents.
Yeah, we always find out later anyway.
Yeah, because they don't want you to know when you're younger. But
that's the Koreans keep secrets, you know what I mean?
They do. They do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Until that other person dies, and then they'll tell you all their shit.
They still won't tell you.
Sometimes. But I found out that, like, my mom was telling my dad that her dad would pick on her. You know, and he was like, no. And then finally my dad confronted his dad and said, yo, are you making fun of my wife? And do you have a problem with her? And he goes, yes. And he goes, all right, we're moving. So he left his parents.
Whoa.
But my dad, you got to understand, my dad has a PhD in nuclear physics. My dad went
really?
To all. Yeah, my dad had to fight to get that PhD because it was a lot of discrimination at that time. So no matter what, my dad wanted equality for everyone.
Yeah.
Not just black people, for everyone. So he goes, if you can't love my wife like I love my wife, we're out. And my dad's always taught me to do what's right.
Yeah.
And he bounced and they didn't talk for a year till they had me. So.
Now, did you grow up dealing with racism or?
Oh, yeah. I grew
up. How did you deal with that growing up, like in like schools and everything?
You know what? It was weird. The schools were predominantly white. You know, there were very few blacks, very few Asian people. And
what
no
about Latinos? No Latinos?
Latinos here and there.
Oh.
But you got to remember, I'm old. Like, how old is Bobby Lee?
40. almost 50, dude.
Yeah, see, I'm 46. Yeah. So it was a different time back then. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah.
So when I went to school, it was more of, I was the only one, I was the only Blasian in that school, I'll tell you that. So even if there were a few Black kids, a few Asian kids, there was no one I could really identify with.
Cause y'all, right, cause you're,
you know what I mean?
Got it.
Because it was the thing where Black, because all the movies back in the day, Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, Black people hated Asian people hated Black people, right?
Do you remember the movie Hollywood Shuffle?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Was that the movie where the white guy was teaching a Black guy how to sound Black?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Robert Townsend.
Robert Townsend was on that. Yes.
Yeah,
Hollywood
yeah.
Shuffle, man.
Yeah.
So I experienced a lot of crazy things, but here's what's awesome about my dad. Even though he went through all that bullshit, I've never heard him talk negative about any other race, you know, which takes a lot. Not once. And he marched to eat in restaurants. You know what I mean? Like he marched, but he never says bad things about other races because he's just like there are ignorant people in every race.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to know, you know?
And your folks are still together as well, right?
47 years this year, man. Look at that. Boom. It's rare, bro. When I was growing up.
That's rare with the same race couples, you know?
Dude.
It's couples in general. It's a rare thing for them to, you know, there's a lot of divorces going on. You know?
Well, you remember when we were young, when somebody got a divorce, it was whispered.
That was like the gossip. Like,
whoa. I know you were like, oh my God, they got divorced. Now when couples are still together, you're like, oh my God, like they're still together. Now that's the big like kicker. Like they're still together and my parents are doing it. But I was telling my friend this and they were surprised. And I want to ask you about this. Did your parents tell you they loved you? If you got to think that long, that means no.
Later in life.
How crazy. Like every time I say it on stage.
You have to understand, dude. My dad was working more than half the time. He was trying to maintain 3 or 4 clothing stores, driving to Riverside and Marimaca. Yeah. He was driving everywhere, man.
Dude, I tell you, when I tell people my parents didn't tell me they loved me until I was 29.
Yeah.
Normal people don't believe it, but like, you know, Asians, like they don't, it was in Crazy Rich Asians. We do not say what is known.
No,
like,
they just show through their actions.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? They'll get you a better gift at Christmas or, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. They'll buy you whatever you need.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they'll buy themselves something better. That's what my mom always did. She would give me something, but then she would buy herself a Gucci bag.
Oh, or something. Yeah. It sounds just about right.
Oh,
yeah, man, Koreans can be real kind of, not superficial, but they're real. Have you noticed a lot of them can be judgmental?
You know what's crazy about Koreans too is they don't really support other Koreans. Unless they're K-pop, you know?
Even when you're family, they'll hate.
Yeah.
Like my uncle, this is some shit that I found out later in life. My Imobu, my mom's sister's husband sold my dad and his brother a clothing store, right? Hey, uh-huh. You want to buy the store? So they go, yeah. And so they bought that store, and across the street, he set up shop to compete and put it under.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not. I mean, I'm not lying. No, I'm serious. Yeah, I'm serious. They do. That was in the family.
Oh man.
That's some like, sick shit.
Yeah. Like my mom is ruthless, man. Like I was talking to my son because since my parents didn't tell me they love me till I was 20, I tell my kid I love him every single day. Like I say it too much almost.
Yeah. No, that's good, man. That's
it's great.
Good.
It's great. Cause I didn't have that. But you know, Asian moms, I'm talking to my kid one day and I'm like, hey buddy, you're the best. My mom literally walks by and goes, how you know he the best? I'm like, she goes, it's much too young to tell.
Oh,
I'm like,
my God.
I'm like, that's my mom.
And
that's
was she
her.
Hard on you growing up as far as academics?
She tried, but
I already know.
She tried so
I
hard.
I already know.
And it's a thing where I'm just not that guy. You know,
yeah,
academic.
Neither were me and my brother.
But
you know what they do respond to is money.
Oh yeah. once I started making it, they were like, oh, good choice. Yeah. Once they see
Koreans, they don't respond. They'll respond to titles, right? Oh, my son is going to Harvard. They'll respond to that. Or they'll respond to my son makes money.
Or my daughter makes money. When you're on TV, I remember I heard my mom say this to one of her Korean friends. They were like, you know, the lady was like, my son's a doctor. And my mom says, oh, turn on TV. You can see.
Why does that have to? It's so shallow, right, Michael?
Korean moms do that, bro.
It's some shallow shit.
It is, but they all do it.
It's not right. Because what does that really do? It makes the other person feel like shit. Then you feel like.
But that other person tried to make her feel like shit.
Then it's an endless loop.
Oh, yeah.
It just keeps going, man.
They do it. That's their thing, bro. That's their thing.
This is flying by the way. I mean, talking to you, I feel like, you know, I'm talking to my brothers or something.
It's so easy, man. It's so easy. What do you keep looking at over there? Do you have a producer over there or something? You keep looking to the side.
No, I want
to
make sure like we're right on time. We're good on time. We're good on time. But there's a clock here. I don't know why I keep looking there. Yeah, that's my bed. Sorry.
Talking to me and you're like, I'm like, what the fuck is he looking?
Do you think Bobby was here? Bobby was here telling me what to ask you. That'd be funny.
No, Bobby's just like, shh, be quiet.
Yeah. Back to your comedy. Now,
yeah.
So before Blasian,
yeah.
How did you get stage time in LA? And like, did you get passed at the store? Did you go through the improv? Like, what'd you do?
So luckily when I started, Chelsea was so big, promoters would want to put you on the show because you were on the show.
Not necessarily.
And here's the thing I did is I had some great guidance. When I first started, it was a lot of comedians from Chelsea. And I did I never did an open mic, but I did comedy nights late at night, you know, and they go do a bunch of those till you got a good 3 to 5 minutes. So I did that for about like 2 or 3 months. And then when I got good, I headlined the show about 6 months in at the improv.
Oh, and you headlined.
Yeah. But headline only 20 minutes. Right. But
still, I mean, you headline.
But you got to understand, I put it like this, is that when you're surrounded by so much greatness and so many great comedians and they like you and they give you pointers.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you're new, you're green, but you got stage presence. And that's the thing. You're likable when you go on stage and you win the first battle.
Yeah.
Now you got to get better at telling jokes. So I was going out every single night. I was like a sponge. I was working from 7 a.m. to like 5 o'clock at night at my TV job. And then going out and doing like mics at like 11 o'clock at night, waking up in the morning.
This is LA.
Yeah. So I was doing like the Melrose Improv, but any person that had like bar show, I was doing it all.
Yeah.
And then I started getting in the Laugh Factory improv as regular spots about a year and a half in, 2 years. And my thing with the Comedy Store, no, I'm not past at the Comedy Store, but I respect that place so much. I feel personally for me, I need to get to the next level before I'm past at that. Like it's almost like
your own show on Amazon Prime.
No. But I want to be like how a Segura is right now, a Burt, a Bill Burr. Like I want to be a monster. Like 100% monster, where when I come in, it's like people know I'm gonna bring it. Right now, it's like people are still discovering that I do come. And I respect the place way too much.
Yeah.
You know, like I do a bunch of shows there for promoters. Like, you know, they'll give promoter shows. I'm always in there, but I'm not past. And I remember Rogan when I was on his podcast, he goes, are you past at the Comedy Store? I go, no. He goes, do you want me to get you audition? I was like, no. Cause I want to be a monster. I don't want there to be any doubt.
Right.
Like when I walk in there, this dude's about to fucking destroy this place.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Is that how you met Joe? Just by going to the Comedy Store?
I met Joe on Fear Factor. I was on the pilot episode of Fear Factor 21 years ago. In 1999, that's when I met Joe Rogan.
Is that on the internet? Can people watch that still?
I get clips all the time. People send it. I had long hair, like it stood up. So I was on the pilot. I was lived in Austin. I was on the pilot and they flew me out to LA and it's the first TV thing I ever did. And that's how I met Joe Rogan. He was the host. And we just bonded.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, we bonded after that. We didn't keep in touch till I got to LA, but that brotherly bond. And like I said, now we talk way more. So he's like a brother now, but just that bond we had back then. And he's proud of what I've accomplished so far.
I'm sure he is.
Like he's such a great guy. You know what I mean? Like he's just a great guy.
Does he make money or what?
Come on now. Come on now. I mean,
I can only imagine what his house looks like.
Dude. They have pictures on the internet. Like, I don't want to be that dude, but I was on the internet. It popped up on my feed.
Yeah.
Like, look at Joe Rogan's new house. And I was killing like, oh my. Dude. But you know what? Some people, like, hate on people, but
I'm not hating. That's inspiring to me. Like, damn, dude, he did that through his podcast?
Podcast. But through you got to remember. And the thing is, he's so good, though. I know.
Good. I look up to him.
Dude, I love, like, when I say, like, I will go to the wall for Joe Rogan, like, what he's done for me in just the three times it put me on, it's put me on a different level.
I'm glad you brought that up. What does that do to one's social status or profiling once you're on the Joe? I've always wondered that.
After I went on the first time, I remember this is when you were flying planes. People would come out to your shows. Like, literally, he will sell your show out. Just him mentioning you're going to be somewhere, it sold out because of him. Or you move a lot of tickets. You know what
just
I mean?
Through his podcast and Jamie saying something at the end or in the description or something.
Anything, man. Jamie kills it over there too. Yeah. Here's the thing is they really look out for the comics and everybody. Like that's why people love the show. And that's why it's gotten big because he knows his audience so well. And that's what I was telling you at the beginning of the podcast. Like, I haven't found, like, I know it's weird because my audience is, because I see the numbers, like 65% women to 35% men. Like
a lot. More women?
Oh, yeah.
I have like 3% women.
No way. Well, this podcast is going to suck dick on your show. Well, maybe you'll get some new female.
I'm sorry.
I got to go.
I mean, look at my place. It's like Dewey's Playhouse in this motherfucker.
I thought you were going to say, I'm sorry, man. I got to go.
It's like Pee-wee's Playhouse.
No, but it's fine. Yeah, you're a good looking dude. No, but you got to remember, I was on the radio. I was on entertainment news.
Yeah.
That gears more female, you know, but like when Joe Rogan, I got a lot of male fans. Because of Joe Rogan. Like, it's more of the softer dudes.
Now, did your Instagram just boost up?
Dude, so...
Like, what was that like?
So, before I started Rogan, I was like, and I'm not huge on Instagram right now, but I was at, like, 35,000, and he got me to, like, 80 after three shows.
What the fuck? Really?
Yeah.
Say those numbers again. You're at 35, and he got...
35,000... So 35,000 after the first time I did it went up some crazy number, like 15,000 people. And then just, you know, cause people, here's the thing about Rogan, you'll get that big pop the first day, but then a month you're getting new follows for that whole month. Cause people go back and listen to the podcast. You know what I mean? And
I still look up his clips.
Yeah. I mean, you never know.
Don't shit.
You never know. And then if you say something topical on his show, then that clip just goes viral. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So like I've been on a show a couple times on a Monday when the fights are on the weekend and he hasn't done a podcast and I'll watch the fight. My thing is I watch the fight just to make sure if it comes up, I can say something. And I put hey, I don't know shit about this, but I saw this. And he'll talk about it because he's a professional at it and he knows what he's saying. So him just talking about the fight will go viral. And it's just you sitting there going, So people...
in your mind, is it like cha-ching, cha-ching?
No, because because when I'm there, I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous, not of him. I'm nervous, can I keep content coming out of my mouth for that long? Because the first time, because you don't want to be the dude to go on a show and after 30 minutes, he's like, all right, man, well, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah. Now, do you think people like get nervous before they go on? I mean, you would have to, right?
I mean, it's like going on. I mean, it's not like, it's going on the biggest podcast in the world.
So what kind of mental trips do you have to like huddle over?
I was calling all my friends that were, I called Eric Griffin. I called Jesse. I can't say it. Paul, what's the comedian's name? Jesse, she's a female. Jesse, Paul. Oh my God, I'm blanking on her last name, but she's very funny. I called her. I called like three or four people. And I go, I'm so nervous that I won't even make it an hour. You know, because you don't like, what if, because I'm like, literally I was saying, because I'm not like an alpha dude. I don't hunt. I don't drink. What are we going to talk about? And I was freaking out. And
were your hands getting sweaty?
No, but mentally you're just like, am I going to be good enough to be on this podcast? And I say that every time because you just don't know. Yeah. But I did, and I'm not going to say, I did learn a lot about, you learn what Joe likes when you do it enough. And now I feel when I go back, I know what he likes on his podcast.
Yeah.
He just wants you to be knowledgeable, you know,
it could be everything. Anything.
Yeah. Where if like, it's the greatest thing you can do on Joe Rogan is give him a fact he doesn't know.
Right.
And then James, too,
man. That guy knows a lot about everything.
And then Jamie will look it up on the board. And then you're talking. So that I start, like when I go on, dude, that week or a week and a half, and it may be like I'm crazy, but I read everything. I research stuff. Like
sleep at all? I wouldn't be able to sleep.
it's like a test. I'm like cramming for the test. I remember I was on there and I told him that hippos kill more people a year than all the animals combined. And he was like,
that up randomly?
No, because I was reading it because I was researching. And it shocked me that if you combine all the animals in the world, all of them, hippos kill more people a year. Just hippos kill more people than all those animals. And Joe didn't believe it. And I was like, oh, this is Jamie, put it up. And we looked it up. And here's another fact. They're vegetarians. That means they're just killing people for fun.
Yeah, like
they're not caring. This is like a vegan that's just going on rampage.
That gave you like 20, 30 minutes of solid material right there. Dude. You're like, boom.
And that's what I do. When I go on, I talk about my, like when I did my Corona episode with him,
that was a good one, by the way. I checked that one out. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah,
well,
I really felt that one. Yeah.
Dude, it was rough, but it's a thing where that one, I didn't have to prep because I knew what it was going to be about. And we talked about it.
I'm glad you brought that up. Cause man, this flew by the way, like,
are we done already?
We're almost done. Well, we could go a little longer though. Cause I want to talk about the Corona thing. Cause it's like back in the news and
you
know, with the masks and everything. Like,
how
did you get it? And like, what did it do to you, man? Like, how did you deal with that?
Well, I was in New York City.
Yeah.
And then I came home and 7 days after I got back from New York, it hit me. So I'm thinking I got, cause I did shows at Gotham Comedy Club and I'm thinking I got it somewhere in New York because you got to remember, nobody knew about it.
Right.
You know, so nobody really had masks. There was, when I got it, less than 100 people died from it.
Yeah.
So it was news, but it wasn't really like everybody wear a mask and everybody stay at home.
Right,
it was
kind of like, right.
Do your own thing and we'll see how this works out. And then at that time you had Trump on there saying it's going to go away.
Right.
Not that I believe him, but that was the narrative is, oh, you don't need to wear a mask because we need to save the mask for the doctors and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so
I remember that. Yeah.
I come home, I get it.
How'd you know you had it?
Dude, I couldn't breathe. Literally, I was like gasping for air.
You couldn't breathe?
I was gasping for air. My wife had to call 911. And this is how early it was. 911 operator was like, you got to get him out of the house, put him in the front yard. So literally I'm laying in my front yard gasping for air because I can't be around my family waiting for an ambulance. It was bananas, bro.
So it was bananas. Did you recover from that, man?
So I get to the hospital. They tell me I got corona. I mean, they got to take a test, but they're pretty sure I got it. And then they just said, you know, we'll know in 2 days if you're going to make it or not. And that's when that shit all fell. Like, you know, they said, I remember when I said, am I going to make it? And they go, we'll try our best. Like, that was the moment where it's like, that's where I just mean, broke
down. What were you going through mentally when they say some shit like that?
Well, here's what's so interesting is when they took me to the ICU, I was the only person in there.
You're the only one?
I was the first one there with Corona. So it was a blessing that everybody's attention was on me. And I was physically I was healthy. So they could use a lot of stuff on me to try out because they didn't know.
Yeah.
So anything hydroxychloroquine, they tried it for a day. I had a bad reaction to it. They tried the malaria drug. I mean, they were giving me everything. And it was so, I was hurting so bad, headache, not just a headache. It was a migraine times 1,000. Like I felt like my head was going to explode. My body, I couldn't move.
Were you taking Advil or ibuprofen?
Oh no, everything was shots, man. It was like,
getting shots.
Yeah. And here's what's crazy. The pain was so bad that the second night I really thought I was going to die, but I also was hallucinating because you hallucinate too, that it almost felt like it wasn't real. Damn. Like you're like, this can't be really happening. So I was in a dream state and I wasn't eating. It's just a blessing being here talking to you, to be honest.
God bless. I mean, you made it out and you look healthier than ever, man.
Yeah. And so 8 days in the ICU.
When did you start getting your breath back?
Man, I just started feeling 100% probably about a month ago. So I had one of those long hauls. You know, like it was like 6 months where it kind of messed with me, Brian.
Now, do you have a natural immunity to it now? Is that
they say I do. They did. Like they're trying to figure it out, but they said I have long immunity. So I'm good for like a year, year and a half.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah.
Because I had it so bad, man. But
that's so crazy.
But you know, the positive, you know, here's what's interesting. A lot of people's lives end like that. And they don't get to reflect at all. Me, the great thing about it is I was in a lot of pain, but I did get to reflect.
Were you thinking about your wife and your kids?
My wife, my kids. And then you think about your life and you think about, did you make the right moves? Did you treat people right? And I was happy to say that as far as me treating other people right, I was very excited that that did happen.
Yeah,
you know, like I couldn't go back and say, well, I fucked them over. But it was like, I was a good dude and I treated everybody like I wanted to be treated. The saddest part that crushed me until I knew I was going to make it is like, kids, like they will never know the man I truly was.
Damn.
You know, and that's
some mental trips, man.
Man. And that was the hardest thing because my wife can tell them, but they won't get to experience it.
How did she deal with it?
Dude, she was a mess. Like I told my parents the real story when I was in there, like, hey, I might not make it, but
like every day
she was calling my mom. She couldn't talk to me. No one can see me. Like you literally die alone in there. Like if you die, you die alone because it's so contagious.
You're quarantined and everything.
You're quarantined. So my wife was calling the nurses. She was calling my mom. My mom was calling the nurse. Now I told my parents how serious it was where I might not make it, but I never told my wife because I didn't want her to worry. Because she had two
kids. How are your folks responding to this?
Oh, they were scared. This was the first time I ever told my parents I'm scared. And
they were scared that you said that.
Because they know that's not how I talk.
Right, right.
So that's when my dad said he lost it and started calling a hospital. My mom started calling a hospital. My wife started calling a hospital.
Oh, my God.
Dude.
Hey, let's keep it positive. You made it out.
Yeah. I made it out, and Bobby Lee still won't
live in a new house in Vegas in Nevada.
That's right.
Yeah,
I beat Corona, and Bobby Lee still won't put.
You're that dude. I just remember that time period. It's like because I didn't really know about you like that, but then your name started popping up. I'm like, oh, who's Michael Yo? And then I started looking you up, and I'm like, oh, okay, he's a comedian. And then I started like getting familiar to who you were.
You know what? And I beat Corona, and Bobby Lee still won't have me on his podcast. How fucked up is that? Like, I almost died.
Let's call him out right now. Hey, Tiger Belly.
Tiger Belly.
Man, you got to get my man Michael Yo. He's a good dude.
Thank you, Tiger Belly.
Get him on ASAP.
Yeah, he's not going to listen. He's scared, man. He's scared.
One thing you got to know about my brother, man.
He's crazy.
There's a hamster wheel turning at all times.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. But
you could be talking to him. He could be looking at you, but then he's thinking about a video game. He's like, uh-huh, yeah, sounds good, buddy. But then, we got it.
And then he'll grab my hand and goes, you are so good looking. Oh, man.
Hey, I'm putting this out there. You're always welcome here.
Thank you. Got to do my
part two. Look, this is a record for Zoom. Usually, I'm going to be honest with you, Michael. My Zooms are 45.
Oh, dude, my bad.
We're at an hour.
We got to go. We got to go, man. We got to go. We're going to do it again sometime.
Part two, part three. But first, I mean, lastly, I want to promote. I want people to know where they can watch your special, your Instagram, and all your website and all that stuff. Go ahead.
So the biggest thing for me is watch the special Blasian. Just go to michaelyo.com and please leave a comment. Just leave a comment on the special. And the other thing, I do this podcast called Morning Yo. It's on my Facebook page, and then I put it out there. So be a part of the Facebook fam. Another thing, hit me up on Instagram.
What about the Michael Yo Show?
Oh, the Michael Yo Show was a different podcast, but I just changed it to the Morning Yo like yesterday.
Okay, so let people know that, because I wrote down the Michael Yo Show.
Yeah, Michael Yo Show is now the Morning Yo, and I do it in the mornings.
So it's the Morning Yo. It's a change, everyone. It's the Morning Yo.
Yes, but Blasian is the special, and I'm asking all your people just to go there and give it some stars and give it some love. That's it.
What about your website and your social media and all that?
MichaelYo.com, and then Instagram at Michael Yo, and that's it. Everything's at Michael Yo. I got in early, so I'm at Michael Yo and everything.
Good. Hey, man, I wish you the best, man, and hopefully I can catch one of your shows when all this is over, man.
And then when I'm in LA, I'll hit you up. We need to grab some Korean barbecue or something.
I'm down for it.
100%, man.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about Korean food, man. See?
Well, we gotta talk
about that kimchi.
Oh, man. Do you still get the kimchi?
I fuck with kimchi, dude. Dude,
where do you get it from?
K-Town.
K-Town, you get it?
I get a big jar of it, yeah. I eat it up like M&M's.
Yeah, you do it old school.
With nothing. I'll just like open the fridge and just
pump
and put it in my mouth.
You know, I gave my mom Corona, and she said she got it. And after I beat it, she said, I beat in one day.
Kimchi.
Yeah, kimchi.
So you heard it first on the Steve Wiebe Show. Kimchi can cure all.
That's right. All right, I know we got to go.
I really thank you for your time, Michael. Tell the family I said hello, and I'll catch you on the next time.
Okay, cool, man. Have a great one. Peace. All right, later.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this ran longer than our typical Zoom. I'm gonna blurt out my shout outs real quick. We do have a Patreon attached to the show. The newest patrons as of now are Matthew, Kaler, Corey Lee, Davies, James Briscoe, and Gilbert Marquez. Welcome. If you want to become a patron to help support this podcast, go to patreon.com/Stevie Wiebe. All my music's at Stevie Wiebe, .bandcamp.com. My Instagram is Instagram/QUANGOU. My website is stevieweebyshow.com. Just know if you get a shirt, it's going to be delayed because of the COVID. I'm 8 songs into my concept album. I'm having a good time creating it every night, making beats, writing. I'm sure y'all will enjoy it once it's done. The newest music video right now is The Pod in Which We Travel. That's on my YouTube, youtube.com/stevieweeby. There is no Little Ray's World. He's out there near the Zeta Reticuli constellation, but he is, I heard it from the grapevine that he is on 1 or 2 songs on this new album. He said that he snuck them in there somehow. Okay. If you want to send any of your packages, send all your stuff too, because I do have a P.O. Box. 1425 North Cherokee Avenue, P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California, 90093. With that being said, thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week. Keep tuning in for the content and interviews and all that good jazz. Love y'all. Peace.